Yeah, so good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for being here, and thanks to us and the co-organizers and the Collège de France for the invitation to speak today. So what I'm going to do today is really talk to you about the genomic history of the domestic horse. Clearly, this is a surprise to none of us, I guess, that horses are very peculiar in the animal kingdom for their massive impact on human history. In fact, way before domestication, they were the animals that we represented the most in the cave art record of Western Europe, for example. But for sure, ever since we domesticated them about 4,000 to 6,000 years ago, they provided us with a lot of services, most of which are related to increased mobility patterns, because with horses we could travel way faster than we could with our own legs, in fact. And so the horses, they provide us an opportunity to connect people, regions, cultures, languages, at unprecedented pace. For example, it took regions that took probably days or weeks before to reach. We're actually connected in a matter of hours or days now, or months. We're connected in a matter of weeks, in fact. So clearly, big changes in patterns of mobility, human mobility. But also horses, they gave us a great opportunity to kill each other out a lot more efficiently. And so therefore, affecting and reshaping over history geopolitical power between empires and different regions of the world. So clearly, there's no doubt that human history as we know it today has been massively influenced by horses. But in the process of us utilizing the horses, of course, we have equally transformed the horse in terms of biological selection and quite important blends of different ancestries, I guess. So, and this is the focus of my group, to have focused really over the last, say, decade now, to try to disentangle different processes that gave rise to the domestic horse in the first place, but also made it possible to engender the whole diversity of animals that we know of today and that we make use of today. And we try to answer to questions such as, you know, when we domesticated the horse, where did we do so, how did we manage to do so, and how often even we managed to do so. For the sake of this very conference, because the focus is about admixture, I decided to focus on this as the main driver, of course, domestication. But of course, we have to keep in mind that potentially adaptation and artificial selection, in fact, was an equally important driving force along the process. So as far as modern horses are concerned, there are about 600 breeds of modern domestic horses spread across about 60 million of individuals around the world. They are the ones that I show here to the left. They are shown in red here and for the rest of the talk. In addition to them, there is only one single population of horses that have long been considered as the last truly wild horses living on the planet, and they are named the Przewalski's horses. And interestingly enough, they became extinct in the wild during the 1960s. But they have been saved from extinction due to a massive preservation efforts in zoo in captivity. And now we have about 2,000 such individuals roaming in reintroduction reserves from a captive stock of about 12 to 15 individuals. Of course, the two lineages, our previous work shows that they have split about 35 to 50,000 years ago, which is way prior to any animal domestication process in human history. So clearly, those two groups, they don't tell us much about the process of one of those two groups only becoming domestics. So one of the focus we had was to try to identify this sort of missing lineage that gave rise to the modern diversity of domesticates. And in this quest of trying to find the genetic homeland of the modern domesticates, one of the first sites we looked at is this site in north central Kazakhstan, looking at a site called Botai. This is a site that the name of the site is because archaeologists have found a lot of artifacts there, but also because they had a very particular culture, the culture of which was actually focused on the almost exclusive exploitation of horses, because out of about 300,000 animal bones that have been ever excavated at Botai, 99% of them are horses, in fact. So they hardly have any other animals than just horses. These sites and these bones are actually dated to about 5 to 5.5,000 years ago. And there are other reasons for archaeologists who, at least some of them, consider that this is one of the smoking gun of horse domestication. This is because some evidence of earliest breedling has been reported, evidence of horse milking as well has been reported, as well as evidence of horse calling has been reported. So we went there and sampled 20 different animal bones from the Botai site, generated 20 moderate coverage genome, about 2 to 4x coverage of 20 of such individuals. We also sequenced about 5 more from the neighbor site of Borli 4, which is another site almost contemporary to Botai, dated to about 5,000 years old. And to put the domestication process into context after Botai, we also sequenced about 50 horse genomes spread across Eurasia and radiocarbon dated to last 4.2 thousand years ago. And we use this genetic diversity to fit a population model using an admixture graph and all possible combinations of F4 statistics that were available with the data set that we had. And the model shows you that the Botai horses and the Borli horses dated to 5.5 to 5,000 years ago was actually directly ancestral to the Przewalski's horse lineage, the one that was considered the only truly wild horse population living on the planet today. Whereas the modern domestic, so it depicts a situation where horses at Botai were first domesticated, but actually this process has become somehow abortive and ended up becoming today known as the only relictual population surviving in the wild and in captivity, the Przewalski's horses. What is really striking is that all the diversity of modern domesticates still shown in red here, as well as all the other horses that we had on that panel dating back to the last 4.2 thousand years ago, were actually segregating on a different branch, very different from the other one, and that depicts the existence of a second domestication process kicking in somewhere else, and probably between 4.2 thousand years ago or to 5,000 years ago, which are respectively the ages of radiocarbon dates that we obtain on the earliest horse belonging to this lineage and the latest one that we identified belonging to the other lineage. So clearly it fits a model in which two domestication processes were at play. One became abortive and the other one was actually winning the competition or became really widespread across the world. Those two different processes were almost independent because when trying to estimate gene flow back and forth between those two lineages, we hardly find evidence of more than 2 to 3% of admixture from the first into the second one. So that gives us an idea of when this turnover took place, about 4.2 to 5,000 years ago. But we didn't know where the second process took place. We only knew the location of the first one. So that's why with my group in the following years, we focus on sequencing a lot more of ancient horse genomes spread across Eurasia. And as shown here, ended up sequencing 264 ancient horse genomes at about 2 to 3x coverage and radiocarbon dating all of them. As you see here, the radiocarbon age calibrated in 1,000 years ago as the vertical axis. And as you can see, we made a substantial effort into sequencing as many horse genomes as we could in this time period that is key for the turnover between about 4 to 5,000 years ago, okay? But we also sequenced a bunch of other much older genomes to sort of put the population model that pre-existed to domestication to clarify this population structure. Okay, so this is the genetic ancestries that we have recovered, the genetic diversity represented in multiple dimensional scaling plots here with the age of the animal still shown on the vertical axis. And what you could see straight off is that the modern domesticates are here in dark brown or red. You have the other horses belonging to the second domestication process that I will keep on referring to as the DOM2 lineage, the second domestication lineage. In orange, we find the Botai and we find the Przewalskis. Those we knew from previous work, but what is clearly new is that there's a whole bunch of diversity that was not characterized before with quite divergent or different lineages roaming around. But luckily for us, when we look at this diversity is actually not uniformly spread across space, and there is a strong pattern of phylogeographic structure in the data, as shown here by 5 ancestry components on different sites that we have sequences for, dating from before 5,000 years ago, so older than 5,000 years ago, prior to the Botai domestication process becoming abortive. And what you can see is that around Botai here, we have a dominance of the green ancestry, which is characteristic perhaps of the Central Asian region. We have an orange component here in the northern part of the Pontic-Caspian Sea region here. We have the light blue one dominating in Western Europe and probably the dark blue one dominating in Iberia. So clearly this depicts a sort of situation where populations of horses at the genetic level are very strongly structured geographically. So when leveraging this and trying to use patterns of spatial patterns of genetic dissimilarity through space, we can actually estimate migration surfaces across a continuous spatial range. And here, the darker the continuous colors, the darker brown it is, the more isolation, the less migration there will be. You see that it shows Eurasia as a sort of region where horse populations were not really connected by a lot of gene flow, but on the very contrary, there were barriers to migration. So if we do the same map between 4.2 and 5,000 years ago, this is the data that we have. We sort of find the same. Again, we have like patterns of isolation by distance or strong phylogeographic structure in the data. But really from 4.2 thousands of years ago onwards, the situation changes dramatically because now a unique genetic ancestry depicted here as orange that used to be actually characteristic of the Pontic-Caspian region became actually widespread at the scale of all of Eurasia, depicting a situation in which horses that were actually confined in a given region originally became global for the first time, and probably this is the mark of the expansion of the second domestication process. So we could look at the genetic patterns of geographic patterns of genetic dissimilarity to make this point. We could also look at the data a bit differently, for example, trying to correlate genetic distances corrected by the difference in time between the different samples that we sequence as a function of geographic distance. Prior to 5,000 years ago, you have a strong signature of correlation between those two distances, genetic and geographic, depicting a situation in which you have isolation by distance. And if you do the same in the last 4,000 years ago, there is no correlation anymore. There is no isolation by distance, supporting the model of an expansion. So since we were lucky to have populations so much structured at the geographic level prior to 5,000 years ago, what we decided on doing was to train a deep neural network model, the one that is actually developed in the locator software, to try and answer the simple question about where did the ancestors of any dumb to horse, the second domestication process horses, where did those ancestors ever lived? And so we took all the different genomes that we have in the last 4,000 years, and we simply ask, using locator, what was the location of their ancestors? Should they live in today, or 1,000 years ago, or 2,000 years ago, or 3,000 years ago, or even 4,000 years ago? This is the pseudo-likelihood surface that we obtain as answering this question, depicting this narrow region in the northern range of the Caucasian mountain range, around the lower Don Volga region as the source of the Don II horses. So now we know the where, and what is very striking, we not only know the when, but we also know the where. And what is very striking is that at the same time as we see this expansion of this Don II lineage around 4.2 thousand years ago, this is almost coincidental with expansion of equestrian material in the archaeological record. As shown here, for example, with cheek pieces of horses that are made of deer antlers that actually spread from here, this region around the Carpathian Basin, as far east as the Ural, around 3.95 to 3.75 thousand years ago, but also in the form of what is called the Sintashta culture or material culture, which is the culture that is associated with the earliest development of spoke-wheel chariotry. So here you see a human buried together with a chariot, with the spoke wheels, and the two horses that were probably drawing the chariot, basically. And this is a culture that expands from about southwest of the Urals across Central Asia between 4.1 to 3.8 thousand years ago, which tells us that at the same time as the horse expanded, which is the dumb two horses expanded, which is the engine, I guess, the vehicle expanded. And at the same time as the vehicle, of course, the drivers expanded, which fits really well the model that people doing ancient human genomic work have depicted when they see this steppe-related ancestry kicking in about 5.3 thousand years ago, somewhere in the steppes, together with the Yamnaya horizon, spreading towards west, admixing with a background of European population before returning east and reaching, in fact, Mongolia and the foothills of the Altai about 3.7 thousand years ago, together with the spread of the Dom Two Horses and the Sintashta horizon culture. Of course, we can use our data to ask a lot more. And for example, one question that was interesting to us was, when is it that humans started to multiply horses by big numbers so as to sustain this now becoming global demand for animals? And so, for example, first fitting skyline-like models using tip-calibrated mitochondrial patterns of variation or Y-chromosomal patterns of variation to the left and to the right, which actually pointed to the third millennium between 5,000 years ago to 4,000 years ago as the key period in which we really control the reproduction of these dumb two horses, this new bloodline, to sort of make them global. And we could also fit the demographic model present in the ASEND software that leverages patterns of decay of LD in the genomes to actually answer the question about when can we date the population bottleneck resulting in the formation of the Dom Two horses and the Sintashta horses? And we could actually use this to estimate that indeed this bottleneck took place. It was actually a 38% founder event, and this one was dated to about 4.2 or 4.3 thousand years ago. I did not move, right? So long story short, suggesting so two different approaches by Asian skyline on one hand, and on the other hand, dating of founder events pointing to, again, 4.2 thousand years ago, about the time of when this new bloodline actually arose and spread across Eurasia. So we think that we have a good situation here where we can explain the spread of the Dom Two horses towards Asia at the same time as I was saying, the chariots and their drivers and the Sintashta material culture and probably the languages that they were talking, those people, which is the proto-Indo-Iranian language families, I guess. But we have a hard time reconciling this expansion timing and expansion of ancestries towards Europe, because this step-related Yamnaya ancestry was actually described already to have reached Western Europe, especially Germany, in the so-called Cordelware culture complex, already 4.7 thousand years ago, which is 500 years too early relative to the age of origin event and spread of the Dom Two bloodline. And there are other evidence than just the time. If you look at actually the ancestry profiles of those Dom Two horses or the population that is ancestral, directly ancestral to the Dom Two horses, and you see at the genetic profiles of those so-called Cordelware culture horses, the genetic profiles are very different. And this now dominant orange ancestry is actually almost unrepresented, only at a few percent in the Cordelware culture horses. Also, we could actually use all the patterns of F4 statistics to try to use Orientograph and fit a population model, which return a situation in which the Cordelware culture horses, those for which in humans they already have acquired the human ancestry from the steppe for 7,000 years ago, well, you see that those ones are not genetically connected with the Dom Two horses or their direct ancestors. And if you look at the model residuals with more migration edges, we don't expect that we will need much more of genetic flux between the Dom Two horses and the Cordelware culture horses to explain a sort of lack of affinity that this model would have not captured. So that's why we were surprised when recently Meyer and colleagues were, So I was saying that we have a model that doesn't need too much of ancestry, DOM2 ancestry into the Cordillera culture horses to really fit the data. And so that's why we were surprised when Meyer and colleagues released this bioarchive paper, where they explained the Cordillera horse profile as actually basically a mixture of DOM2 horses, those with a lot of orange ancestry, with basically something coming from the upper Paleolithic of Western Europe, a sort of European background mixing with DOM2, which would support actually some Yamaya ancestry going into the Cordillera horse genetic profile. So we went back to the data and actually zoomed in a number of very important points in our data set and recalculating F4 stats to try and see whether the Cordillera cultural horses here with these profiles, they would have an excess of DOM2 or their direct ancestors, an excess of their ancestry relative to any populations that exist in Hungary, in Denmark, in Czech Republic, in Poland, at about the same time, 4.9 to 5.2 thousand years ago, as depicted here. And clearly, we have no F4 statistic support for an excess of DOM2 ancestry into those CWC horses. And on the very contrary, they have a lack of such an ancestry. In fact, the orange ancestry that they have and that the others have was already present in horses roaming in France in 15,000 years ago, supportive of ancient gene flow, ancient structure into Western Eurasian populations, bringing in already before the Yamnaya expansion these orange ancestry. So that's why we think there is no reason to doubt that there is DOM2 ancestry profile brought by the Yamnaya as the expansion of the steppe herders into Europe. And that reflects probably the difficulties that we may have to model population ancestries in a correct way if we only leverage F3 stats, which is the methodology that they use in AdmixTools in the bioarchive paper. Really, F4 stats are a lot more powerful into catching unbalanced patterns of ancestries between complex population structures. And so that's why our model is now that, the steppe expansion of steppe herders into Europe is clearly a massive expansion or something that massively changed the genetic landscape of Europeans about 4.7 thousand years ago, 5,000 years ago. But there is no reason to believe that those herders were actually on a horseback. They were cattle herders, most probably. So in our data set, we have also evidence of other kind of admixtures than those that I expected that I will call archaic for the lack of better word, really. For example, we sequenced the genome of that animal, which is the tapan, which is a now extinct lineage of horse that was actually Roman in the Pontic-Caspian region up until the early 20th century. That's why we could take pictures of them. And this animal is best depicted as here, as a mixture of DOM2 bloodlines together with these Cordillera culture horses from Germany 4.7 thousand years ago. So clearly these ancestries that used to be present in Europe 4.7 thousand years ago somehow were still around until the late 19th century or early 20th century, but in the form of admixed lineages, no pure lineages here. We did the same for the Schawalski's horse lineage because our model could depict that there is a gene flow from the DOM2 bloodlines into the Schawalski's lineage after the 19th century, probably in relation to the domestic, the captivity history, restocking the Schawalski's lineage after they became extinct in the wild. And we could really answer precisely this question because we sequenced a bunch of Schawalski's horse genome from the 19th century, so we could compare the genetic distance or the excess that they have today here, any Schawalski's horse living today from all the different pedigree represented in the captive stock, we could ask whether they share more ancestry with DOM2 horses relative to those horses roaming around in the 19th century. And this is shown in red when the answer is yes, and very significantly. But what you can see is that there are some lineages of modern Schawalskis with an excess of DOM2 ancestry. There are some where it's a little bit unclear, but some others, they are virtually devoid of such signals. So it's not a wave, a uniform wave that makes of a mixture of DOM2 bloodlines into the Schawalski's lineage going on in the 20th century, but something that was structured in the different pedigree lines of this captive stock. For example, you could paint their chromosomes of modern-day Chavolskys and done to horses in red if it's done to ancestry, in gray if it's Chavolsky's ancestry, and you find some long blocks, so this is chromosome 5, I believe, long blocks of done to ancestry into some modern Chavolsky's horses in line with recent admixture between them, but you also find evidence of much shorter range blocks that have been exchanged between the two populations, supportive of more ancient admixture with those two populations that actually projection models could actually date to correspond to gene flow between those two lineages after they split and until the last glacial maximum somewhere around 20,000 years ago. So they remained into contact despite diverging. So in our data set, you may have noticed that we have also additional lineages that I did not mention yet, for example, in Iberia and in Siberia. Here we have two very divergent genomic lineages in our data set that MOMI2 model fit could actually estimate to have split from the other lineages somewhere around 1 million to 500,000 years ago for the lineage leading to the Iberian divergent lineage, or somewhere around 120,000 years ago for the lineage leading to the divergent Siberian lineage. What is really interesting to us is that if you do F4 statistics in that form, where H3 is actually either the Siberian in blue or the Iberian lineage in pink, you realize that the Siberian lineage did not contribute at all to the genomic profile of done to horses, those living for the last 4,200 years, be ancient or modern. They don't have much Siberian ancestry, but the situation is slightly different for the Iberian archaic contribution to the DOM2s that we could estimate to about up to 8 to 10% using capital F4 ratio tests to be about 8% of the ancestry of thoroughbreds, but probably 0% of admixture from those DOM2 horses living in Korea today. So the take home is that these Iberian lineage contributed after the formation of DOM2 by wild introgression in those populations sporadically and in a non-uniform manner across the landscape. So some DOM2 horses living today are enriched in this Iberian divergent component. So to conclude, what we saw is that there are only two lineages of horses living on the planet today. Each descend from two independent domestication processes. The Bowtie descendants returned to the wild and received various genetic contribution genes, including from DOM2 horses in the 20th century. This is the history of captivity. The DOM2 lineage expanded from the Pontic-Caspian steppes around 4,200 years ago to form all modern domestic horse breeds that we know of today. And there are other divergent lineages that existed, such as the Iberian and the Siberian one, that differentially contributed to DOM2 breeds. In fact, there are more divergent lineages than what I've said, and this is a work that we released as a collaboration together with the group from Beth Shapiro in UCSC, where we were lucky enough to identify some some good horse bones from the Upper Paleolithic, so late Pleistocene of the Americas, where the DNA was very well preserved, so we could get high quality coverage over 25x for the two bones that we sequenced. And that revealed a new divergent lineage in the Americas that split away from the lineages that I've mentioned today around 800,000 years ago. And to make a long story short, this lineage actually, even though it evolved in the Americas and the others went out of the Americas to form the lineages that I mentioned today in Eurasia, kept exchanging genes across Beringia somewhere around 750,000 years ago, mainly from the Americas into Eurasia, but also 120,000 years ago in the other direction. So to conclude, the genomic profile of horses today has been really reshaped by a mixture at different moments of history, both prior to and during and after domestication. And with that, I would like to thank you for your patience with me playing with the cable, and also the sponsors, of course, and all my collaborators.